Welcome to Public Health Out Loud, Public Health for the Public. My name is Dr. Philip Chan on behalf of the Rhode Island Department of Health. Recently, the CDC released data showing that nationally, there has been a sharp rise in congenital syphilis cases. Cases have more than tripled in recent years here in the U.S., with more than 2,000 cases reported in 2020 alone. Here in Rhode Island, we're unfortunately also seeing a number of cases of congenital syphilis after over a decade of having none. What is causing these increases and what can be done to prevent it from happening? Today, we are joined by Dr. Erica Hardy, Director of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Women and Infants Hospital and a Clinical Assistant Professor of Medicine, Obstetrics, and Gynecology at the Warren Alpert Medical School of Brown University. Dr. Hardy is actually the person I call when I have any and all questions about congenital syphilis. She's going to be answering these questions and much more today. So Dr. Hardy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Dr. Hardy, tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have you been here in Rhode Island?
Sure. So I completed my medicine and pediatrics dual residency here at Brown. And then I went up to Boston and completed an infectious disease fellowship at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. And then I came back here to join the ID division at Brown, and I have worked primarily at women and infants since about 2010. So yeah, quite a while now thinking back.
Well, welcome and thank you for joining us. And we're certainly glad you're here in Rhode Island. Let's start with some of the basics here. What is syphilis in general and how do people get it?
Yeah, so I'll attempt to answer that. Dr. Chan probably is a much better expert in that in general. But yeah, one of the interesting things is I think we're ultimately going to be talking about congenital syphilis. But one of the things that I think is really important to remember is that it doesn't present differently in pregnant people. And so thinking about syphilis as we do in pregnant and non-pregnant people is really helpful. So there's not a whole lot of differences with presentation, with testing and all that. So syphilis is a sexually transmitted infection. I think it's one of the things that we all learn in medical school, one of the diseases known as the great masquerader, one of them. So it really has a lot of varied presentations. It is transmitted through sexual contact. So, you know, mucous membrane contact, any sexual contact. And then it's a disease that if it's not treated, it doesn't just clear on its own. So, it can become latent, the signs and symptoms can go away. And one of the things that is unique about it is it can cause a congenital infection in somebody who's pregnant at the time when they have syphilis. And so we worry about it for that reason too, kind of twofold.
And I think this bacteria, right? So a lot of people, when they first get the infection, may have a little bit of an ulcer. Sometimes it's a big ulcer. Sometimes yep. It can be a small ulcer. And sometimes it's totally missed at all. So a lot of times people can be asymptomatic.
Yeah. And it's often thought of as painless. So it might be not noticeable if it's in the genital region. That tends to be the first site. And that's usually at the site of inoculation. So the site of contact, you might get an ulcer that you may or may not notice, even without treatment, that might appear about 3 weeks after infection. Even without treatment, that will go away. And then, and that's sort of called primary syphilis. Syphilis can be categorized into stages. So primary, secondary, latent, and tertiary. So that's primary syphilis, generally the chancre. And people don't really have too many symptoms other than that in the beginning. And then it becomes secondary syphilis. That's when you think about the bacteria sort of disseminating throughout the body. And that's a time when I find that I'm diagnosing that the most. And I don't know if you find that too, especially in patients who have HIV, because there has been more syphilis and people with HIV, I'm often diagnosing it with a rash. And the rash can look a lot of varied ways. And so sometimes that can be missed. Some patients might say, oh, I thought it was just a different detergent I used, or, you know, because even without treatment, and that's sort of, that's, I think about it like the bacteria disseminating throughout the body and sort of a full body rash. People might have systemic symptoms at that sign, like they might have lymph nodes that they can feel under the neck or under the arms or in the groin. They might have some fevers and feel a little bit flu-like at that stage. And then even without treatment, again, that goes away. And so people might stop worrying about the rash because it just disappears. And you might think, oh, you know, that's funny. I wonder what that was. And it becomes latent. And so then that's the latent stage of syphilis. And what that means is there's no signs or symptoms, but blood tests will still be positive for syphilis. And it can be early latent syphilis. And all that means is you've had it for less than a year, or late latent syphilis. And that means you've had infection for over a year, but latent means no symptoms. And then that can last for years and decades. And then a percentage of people will progress to tertiary syphilis, sometimes 10, 20 years after infection. And that's where you think about people might have heart issues or bone issues or skin issues with untreated syphilis. And then we think about this thing called neurosyphilis, and syphilis can invade the neurologic system, so the brain, the spinal cord, cranial nerves. And that, it's important to remember, can happen at any stage of disease. So you could have neurologic manifestations in the eyes or the ears, even in the stage of secondary syphilis. So making sure when you're diagnosing someone to screen for any neurologic problems. So that's kind of an overview of syphilis as an infection. Tell me if I've missed anything.
No, I think you've hit all the high points. I was reminded while you're talking. I think, a lot of us when we talk about STIs or STDs, by the way, we use those words interchangeably a lot of times. We consider HIV to be the most serious, and in a lot of ways it can be. But syphilis can be a bit scary, and I think to your point, some of these later stage potential complications, like early dementia, like cognitive effects and cardiovascular, eats away your arteries. I mean, syphilis can be a pretty bad player.
It really can, and it can have, I think that's one of the other reasons to worry about it and really focus on diagnosing, because it is something that without treatment can really hang around and cause transmission and then can cause some long-term health effects as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, just through a lens of public health. We were talking about, there were conversations early in the 2000s, about 20 years ago now, where we were actually talking and frankly on the verge of eliminating syphilis here in the United States. And unfortunately, as you know, what we've seen since that time is just really an exponential increase. And over the last couple of decades, I will say that the predominant population that's been affected has really been gay, bisexual, other men who have sex with men. And certainly, if you fall into that group, you should be tested for sure. And certainly, frequently, at least once a year, if not every 3 to 6 months, if you're having multiple sexual partners. But now we're starting to see the spread more into the general population, which brings us to congenital syphilis. So, talk to
Yeah.
us about, you mentioned the importance of testing and the other group that it's really strongly encouraged are folks that are pregnant. So, talk to us a little bit about congenital syphilis and how syphilis can affect the pregnant mom and potentially the developing fetus.
Yeah, absolutely. I think starting with some epidemiology, I was looking at some of the latest data that came out, and there's a really nice review for listeners who might be interested on syphilis complicating pregnancy and congenital syphilis. Laura Bachman, Kimberly Wokowski, and Irene Stafford just published that in the New England Journal. So that's a really nice overview, really nicely done for anybody who want further reading, along with the STI CDC guidelines and the CDC and Rhode Island Department of Health surveillance data as well for numbers. But congenital syphilis really has increased in really almost every state that we have data for. Some of the numbers were from 2012 to 2021. There's been cases of congenital syphilis have increased by 754%. So a really huge increase in congenital syphilis. So currently, what the data showed is that one in every 1,300 live births is affected. And it's geographic. So, we're lucky in Rhode Island, we haven't seen as many cases, but our state has seen an increase as well compared to what we had seen in the past. But I think it was, every state but one had reported at least one case of congenital syphilis in 2021. But it's really a significant increase. So, congenital syphilis, when we talk about congenital infection, it's an infection that when somebody is pregnant can be passed to the fetus during pregnancy. And so that's, and then the fetus can develop infection with syphilis. And then when the infant is born, can have syphilis disease. And so that's what a congenital infection is. And so we worry about that in other infectious diseases as well, varicella, which is chickenpox, things like that. And they can cause sometimes birth defects in the infant. And so so that's what congenital disease is, and congenital syphilis is something that can affect fetuses when the pregnant person has syphilis. And when we think about the stages of syphilis, it's more likely to be transmitted early on in infection, sort of before the immune system get the pregnant person's immune system kind of gets a hold of the infection. So in those very first stages, primary syphilis, secondary syphilis, that's when I think about the spirochete, which is the name of the type of bacteria that causes syphilis. When that's disseminating, you can think about that is a little bit intuitive to think about that's the most infectious period, because we think syphilis is transmitted through the placenta. So from the pregnant person through the placenta into the fetus. And so we don't understand all about transmission, but we do know it can happen at any time during pregnancy. So very early in the pregnancy, through the middle, and towards the end, even though we don't understand everything about transmission, but it's likely, you know, through the placenta, through the amniotic fluid, and then, you know, ultimately into the fetus causing infection. And so infants, when they're born, if the pregnant person was not treated, and then even unfortunately, if there's late treatment, or even in a much smaller percentage of cases, if the pregnant person is treated, there still can be congenital infection, although in a much smaller percentage. But it can cause things in the baby, such as a enlarged liver. It can cause the pregnancy to end early, so it can cause stillbirth or miscarriage. It can cause babies to be small. Babies can be born with a similar rash that adult people get with congenital syphilis. Remember, I said that it liked the central nervous system, so it likes the brain and the nerves. So it actually can cause, and the eyes are part of the brain, so it can cause eye problems, retinitis, cataracts, things like that, seizures, because infants can get neurosyphilis as well. And it can cause bone abnormalities. It can cause the bones in the baby not to develop normally, and some deformities of the hands and feet. So it can cause a lot of problems in the infant as well.
So this is pretty serious, obviously. And how, I mean, you mentioned up to and including stillbirth, or essentially death. I mean, how, and it sounds like there's a whole range of symptoms. How often are babies fine, even if they are exposed to syphilis, and how often are they either really sick or even result in stillbirth? How common is that?
So we have some numbers looking at that. So we know that, you know, the risk of congenital infection is about 50 to 70% in pregnancies complicated with early syphilis. So that would be that primary and secondary syphilis. If somebody has had syphilis for more than a year, so if it's in that latent stage, the risk goes down to about 15%. And that kind of makes sense when you think, when I talked about sort of how syphilis works, like when you first get it, as it you know, disseminates throughout the body, that's going to be that highest transmission rate. So whereas if you've had it for a long time, your immune system is a little bit better at containing it and stopping the symptoms. There's still a risk. But yeah, it's pretty high, you know, 50 to 70% is a lot. And so I think really the importance of diagnosing and treating as soon as possible is better, because the sooner you treat with congenital syphilis, abnormalities can be seen on ultrasound. And we know that after treatment with, and we'll talk about treatment, but it's an antibiotic, penicillin generally, we can even see some of those abnormalities get better. So we know that the earlier on someone is treated, the better the outcomes will be.
So pregnant people should be tested, correct? And how often and when?
Yeah, it's a great question. So every pregnant person should be tested at their first prenatal visit for syphilis. And that's actually interestingly mandated in most states. And then the recommendation is to test again in the third trimester, so around 28 weeks gestation, and again at delivery for anybody who lives in a high prevalence area. And that would include Rhode Island. So for, you know, providers in Rhode Island, that's a high prevalence area. And then we also think, and that is routine kind of regardless of the pregnant person's risk factors. And so, you know, early on in prenatal care, so first prenatal visit, 28 weeks, and again at delivery. And then for women who are considered to be at higher risk for syphilis, there's some risk factors we think about that are associated with many STIs, but syphilis as well. So that would be multiple sex partners, women who are incarcerated or who their partner's incarcerated, women who have unstable housing, anyone who has transactional sex or exchanges sex for money or goods, and late prenatal care or no prenatal care is a risk factor as well. Anyone who's diagnosed with another STI, those would all be considered risks. So if your patient has any risk factors, making sure to do that extra testing as well. Sometimes I know we know in the STI world that sometimes patients might not know about their risk factors. So they might not know if their partner has other partners. So I think it's really important to think we should always do a really complete sexual history. You might miss something, and the patient might not know about other risk factors that they might have and not know it. So,
And we're lucky that the treatments for syphilis are pretty effective. You mentioned penicillin. So if someone is diagnosed with syphilis, tell us about the treatment.
So if someone's diagnosed with syphilis, I think getting back to one of the take homes is with syphilis is what stage is it, and sort of defining where the patient falls in their disease stages, because the treatment is based on the stage of disease and then whether it affects the central nervous system or not, because we treat neurosyphilis a little bit differently. So anybody who has primary, secondary, or early latent syphilis, so we think about that as kind of like early syphilis, one dose of a benzathine penicillin, and it's an intramuscular injection that's sort of a depot, so it lasts for a bit. That's the treatment for early syphilis, and it's very effective. If your patient has later stage, so late latent or, tertiary syphilis, of course, so anything late latent and more, we'll get 3 doses of benzathine penicillin every week. So we'll get weekly doses. And in pregnancy, you want to make sure that there's not more, ideally not more than 7 days between those injections. But if it's more than 9 days, then you have to start those 3-day doses all over again. Whereas in non-pregnant people, I think they have up to 14 days, is it? Yeah, have a little bit more time. And then for neurosyphilis, I think that's why it's really important to ask those screening questions. Even if you're diagnosing anyone with syphilis, say their blood tests are positive, you want to run through some screening tests for neurosyphilis rather than just kind of treating them based on their lab work. And that's asking, and we can go through those. The King County Public Health in Seattle has a really nice document about screening, but it's asking them questions about their vision, their hearing, and then any neurologic symptoms like confusion, trouble remembering, balance issues, things like that. Because if they have any neurologic involvement, remember, which can happen at any stage, then we actually do intravenous penicillin, which is a multiple doses a day through an IV for 10 to 14 days. So that's generally the treatment. But you see, it's all penicillin. So good old penicillin.
And I think we're lucky. We see a lot of bacteria develop pretty significant resistance, but we're still using good old penicillin. So,
Absolutely.
in a pregnant person who is diagnosed with syphilis, potentially in the first trimester, and gets the adequate treatment, do you have to worry anymore? Does that cure it? And does it cure it for the developing fetus as well?
That's such a good question. And no, it doesn't always. So it cures it in the pregnant person, but they could have already transmitted congenital syphilis. The risk goes way down. So, patients who have been treated, especially early on, often that it significantly decreases the risk of the infant being born with congenital syphilis. There's still a small risk, but it's much smaller. And if they're treated earlier on in pregnancy, so patients who are treated prior to 4 weeks before delivery do the best. So that's when we consider that sort of complete maternal treatment that tends to have a much lower risk of any congenital infection. There still can be a small risk, but it's much, much lower. Patients who are treated less than 4 weeks prior to delivery, there's a little bit of a higher risk as well. So, so as soon as you diagnose, the sooner you treat, the better. But because treatment does take away a lot of that risk. It doesn't completely eliminate it, unfortunately. And so that's why it's really important to follow up the baby and do, testing and potentially treatment in the infant too, based on maternal history. And the infant will get some testing at birth as well. Like sometimes they get x-rays of the bone, sometimes a lumbar puncture to look at the central cerebral spinal fluid, depending. And a lot of that depends on maternal treatment history. And then blood testing in the infant. So it's really important to communicate with the pediatricians that the pregnant person has had syphilis during pregnancy because the infant actually will need some workup at birth.
Let me summarize what I'm taking away from this conversation, and you can feel free to chime in. So we are definitely seeing here in Rhode Island and across the US an uptick in syphilis in general, and concerningly congenital syphilis cases. The average person, it sounds like, shouldn't worry too much. We are seeing some cases in Rhode Island, and it sounds like the most important thing that you're saying is just to make sure to be linked into prenatal care, to make sure to get tested. You get tested, the treatments are effective, but just making sure to check in with your doctor or other medical provider just to make sure you're getting the appropriate care. Probably the most important thing is kind of what I'm hearing.
Absolutely. And I think even outside of pregnancy, ideally you'd be tested and treated prior to becoming pregnant because then that totally eliminates the risk of congenital syphilis. So really important. Some patients might have more trouble accessing healthcare, but really important when it comes to STIs and syphilis because if we can treat and cure prior to even becoming pregnant, then that's ideal. But yes, STIs are very common, very treatable in most cases. And, there are some long-term sequelae, but it's really important to kind of share what you know about your risk factors or sexual history with your provider, because if we test, we can treat and people do much better.
We're here with Dr. Erica Hardy today, infectious diseases specialist in women's healthcare. Dr. Hardy, our time is winding down here, and I know we've talked about syphilis for the entirety of the show today. But any final thoughts for our listeners? Do you want to mention any other STIs or concerns, and any just general final thoughts for people?
Yeah, thank you. I think, it's really important to get into prenatal care, to access healthcare. I think STIs, we're seeing a rise across many STIs, chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, even HIV in women. So I think really important to talk with your provider about STI testing. There's many places, especially in Rhode Island, that you can get STI testing, even outside of primary care. If you don't have a primary care physician at this time, there's many places where you can get STI testing and treatment, in a patient-centered, informed way. And so I think that's really important, I think, because again, if we can test for STIs, treat them, people do much better and can have a healthy pregnancy. And then getting prenatal care throughout your pregnancy, even early on, is really important.
Dr. Erica Hardy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
If any of our listeners would like to know more about prenatal care and their options, please visit the Department of Health's new webpage in both English and Spanish, health.ri.gov/healthy-beginnings. So in closing, I do want to thank Erica Collins, our executive producer, and Carol Stone, our technical director. And I want to again thank Dr. Erica Hardy for sharing her expertise and talking with us today. I'm Dr. Philip Chan, signing off on behalf of the Rhode Island Department of Health. Thank you all and be well.